Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Greetings one, greetings all. Welcome to the 601st episode of this podcast. I say 601st because, you know, 600 was a big deal. And we had Jeff from Thursday. So thank you very much for all of you either wishing well or sharing it on social media or whatever. All those things I 100% do see, I pay attention to, and I keep track of all of that. So, you know, if you're in the red, then step it up. You need to, spread the word of this podcast more. If you're in the black, I'm giving you a digital pat in the back. All those things are obviously sarcastic. I'm just joking. But thank you very much for supporting the show for as long as you have. Or if you just joined, that is totally fine. You got plenty of episodes to catch up on. But I am thrilled today to bring Tyler Short, the vocalist for Inclination, an amazing Louisville straight edge hardcore band. And he also runs the record label Life Death Brigade, or otherwise known as LDB, which is also a festival based in Louisville, Kentucky. And he also sings for a new band called Walk Alone. It's really, really good. I will toss a link in the show notes, and you'll be able to check that out. And then obviously Inclination as well. I mean, I became obsessed with that band when they released their first EP/demo, and then have subsequently loved all of their output, have seen them a few times now, and I am just like, just worshiping at the straight edge altar of metallic hardcore that they encompass. So I reached out to Tyler, and it's funny, we talk about this in the interview, but he's often known as a Luddite because he has like a flip phone, and you know, people joke, have made internet jokes about him in regards to that, but he's not. I mean, he is deliberate about his usage and the flip phone nature of his life, but he's not a Luddite, and because obviously we did a podcast, so it's like, you can't be that. And yeah, anyways, I just had to dispel any rumors of, people saying that Tyler just lives, by himself with no computer, no television. Like, no, that's not the case at all. Not like anyone was really worried about that. But anyways, you can get in touch with the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I love to hear feedback, guest ideas, just sharing music, whatever it is, love to see it come in. And also, if you want to support the show for $0, for no effort whatsoever. And when I say effort, like no effort, we're talking like the bare minimum that you could do. So like, honestly, if like 10% of you who are listening to this right now do this, it makes a huge difference. And honestly, probably like 2% of the people that listen to the podcast on a weekly basis have done this. But you can leave a rating and review on the Apple Podcast page, or you can leave a rating on the Spotify page. All of those things help. And honestly, just do it. Take 30 seconds, boom, done. And then all of a sudden you won't hear this ad. You won't hear this plea anymore. I mean, you will, because I can't cut this out, but you get it. So anyways, those are things that you can do for the show, and it helps out greatly. I'm so thrilled too, because I've been able to go to some cool shows recently. Saw Shelter over the weekend, play at Chain Reaction. I get to see Paint It Black this upcoming weekend, and there's just a lot of cool activity going on. My friends in a band called This Day Forward, my old band Taken, did a lot of touring with them back in the day. They're playing 3 East Coast reunion shows, 2 in Philly and 1 in New York in late August. So get your tickets for the shows that are still available. I think the Philly show and the New York show is pretty close to selling out. Regardless, it's just what a time to be alive, you know? Like, all of these reunion tours and anniversaries, and just like, you know, the world is your oyster. You can go to like the biggest shows possible, or you can go to the smallest things possible. And it's really exciting. So anyways, let's go on with the weekly recommendations. If you have been paying attention to the show, you know that I have been doing these weekly just hits of music that I tripped across, things that you should know about, and I compile it into a playlist that I update on a week-to-week basis. I will include a link in the show notes for you to find that playlist, and you can listen to all the stuff that I've recommended week over week. And it's just really fun because, you know, bands I know that like I put on there, like, get excited. I mean, I know on the flip side, if I were included in, you know, a playlist from somebody that is, you know, publicly doing something, it's exciting. So anyways, the recommendation this week is a band called New Moon. They're not new, but they just released a new record called Temporary Light. It came out on Quiet Panic Records here in the States. I don't know where it came out over in Europe, but they are an awesome Belgian shoegaze band. And I know, like, you hear shoegaze, especially here in the year of our Lord 2024, and are like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I throw a rock and I hit 15 different shoegaze bands. And that is true. It is a very popular genre right now, but the bands that do it well, like, you can hear it. And New Moon has existed for quite some time. Like, shout out to good friend of the show, Jeremy Bohm, who released a 7-inch on his label Secret Voice. This was probably, gosh, I don't know, 7-8 years or so ago. That was the first time I came across this band, because I know Touche played some shows with them over in Europe and whatever. Anyways, I always thought the band was cool, but this record blew me away. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, they've just dialed in all of what they have kind of learned in the past as far as just, you know, songwriting, sonics, all that stuff. And I think this record is incredible. So again, the band is New Moon and the record is called Temporary Light. You need to check it out. Like I said, came out in Quiet Panic Records. I'm pretty sure the vinyl is sold out. I actually had to go to Amazon to find the vinyl, but because all of the stores, like the online, you know, portals for the band and the label and stuff like that, were all sold out. So anyways, sometimes you gotta, you know, go to odd places to buy vinyl, even though Amazon sells a ton of vinyl. So anyways, let's talk to Mr. Tyler Short. And like I said, he sings for Inclination. He also sings for a new band called Walk Alone. He also has, I will link this in the show notes as well, he has a country music podcast that he's been, you know, diving into with a friend. He's done maybe like, I don't know, a handful of episodes so far. It's a cool listen. I've listened to a few episodes and I'm like, this is great, because, you know, it just shows the depth of us as humans. And like, when you get obsessed with certain genres of music, or, you know, rabbit holes that you go down, it's really, really fun and exciting. So anyways, but yeah, and his new band is called Walk Alone, which of course I will link in the show notes. So like, if there is a prevailing theme that you see here, it's the fact that you can find anything in the show notes of this show and just like have links du jour. So anyways, let's talk to Tyler Short from Inclination, Life Death Brigade, and Walk Alone. We'll be right back. I told Isaac this when I had him on the show, where I just became obsessed with Inclination. Like, once you guys released your demo, it was one of those things where I was just like, oh my gosh, straight edge, metallic influenced hardcore. Like, you know, I'm already pot committed, but then all of a sudden it was just like, oh my gosh, there's more layers to it. Like, I like the lyrics, I like the approach, just everything. And I'm sure you, as a straight edge adult, there's something like when you hear other bands, like I'll just throw another random band out, like, you know, World of Pleasure. Once I started to hear them, I was just like, Jesus Christ, like, this is so up my alley. I love this. And anytime you trip across a band like that, in certain respects, I'm sure it makes you feel young, because it's like, oh, the torch of straight edge is carried on to, you know, different generations or whatever. Do you find yourself like getting, you know, I guess, intrinsically attached to bands, obviously based off of, I mean, music first, but then just being like, oh, they are straight edge, or they are, like, you get just these little nuggets that you get obsessed with. Do you get that way, or am I just obviously, you know, a weirdo?
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, from the first bands that introduced me to straight edge to that, that Triple B comp song that we have, that Fruition song, is about me watching the younger generation take on the same ideas and the same topics and ethics that got me engaged in hardcore and straight edge in particular, and seeing them take that torch up in such a way that is authentic and intentional and just falling in love.
Right.
Like, showing like the true care that like somebody, because I also operate in very much a way of like, I'm living for today right now, which leads me to not really care too much about my own body, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Where like, I kind of like, I guess I can like square that circle with like, I don't do drugs or drink or anything like that like harms myself. So I am free to be a complete freak at shows, and I think I'm going to die that way at some point, maybe, or I'm at least going to die in some careless fashion, it seems. So like, it's somewhat comforting to me sometimes to think like, at least there's the younger kids who are expressing themselves in a way similarly to the way that I like to be expressed too, and then I like to express myself, that at least when I'm gone, that spirit's still around.
Right. I really love that articulation of that, because it is,
not to start so morbid, but
no, dude, I mean, I identify with that thought process. Like, I mean, I'm on the opposite side of you in regards to like, I mean, I've just always been, you know, a square at shows in regards to like, I can sing along, but like, you know, stage dives, like, I could kind of do them, but I, you know, like, cut my ankle pretty badly when I stage dove to 1134 at the Showcase Theater in Corona, California. And then after that, I was like, I need to take it a little bit easy. But regardless, the thread that you're pulling on of just the idea that you recognize some version of yourself in the music that is output, or, you know, the band's message or whatever it is. And I think that's what is interesting, because as you get older, and I'm sure you've experienced this, sometimes it takes a little more effort to, you know, find those pockets or find those things you identify with. But it, once you do, it's just like, oh yeah, like this, I'm glad this is still, you know, existing and passing on, and not just, you know, like you said, floating to the ether.
Oh no, absolutely. And like, with the getting older thing, like, dude, you just can't remember lyrics like you could when you were younger. Like,
right.
I've got lyrics lodged in my brain from 18 to 24 that are going to be there till I die. Yet it's like, it seems like a labor to memorize new lyrics now, that I'm like, I'm doing all kinds of things to like, trying to like read more and just occupy my mind in a way that seems more constructive, just to like, out of fear of atrophy right now, that like, goddamn, like, it takes me like way more passes to memorize Magnitude lyrics than it did for me to memorize Blacklisted lyrics as a kid. But I'm trying to put in the work. I'm really trying to put in the work, because I believe in it, man. And that's, it's hardcore's just, it's the cool, the cliche thing I say all the time, which I've been saying this on stage for years, is it's the coolest thing going on in my life, and I'm never going to pretend it's anything other than that. And I really appreciate when I see young kids who are acting like this is forever, and I believe them.
Right. Totally. It's because that, I mean, to your, what you were talking about, you truly just paying attention to what's right in front of you right now. That is the element of, you know, youth. Like, that clearly happens up until whatever, your mid-20s, and, you know, the real life starts to penetrate, whether it's work and other obligations. But yeah, you do feel it's just like, this will stretch on forever, and there's no end to it until there is. And that's, but you're not even thinking about that.
No, I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah, totally, totally. Were you actually born and raised in Louisville, or did you come up somewhere else?
Yes, always lived in Louisville.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, Louisville. I'm not Louisville. I don't want
to. I code
butcher,
switch.
Butcher the name.
I code switch when I talk to outsiders. I say Louisville sometimes too.
Okay. I mean, I personally have a large reverence for Louisville because I just became obsessed as I started to get into punk and hardcore with everything that came out of Louisville, from, you know, Endpoint, Elliott, like all of that stuff. I was just like, why is this so much cool stuff coming out of Louisville? So, I always bow down to the city, as it were, but, and we'll get there eventually. But your, what was your family structure like? You know, mom and dad in the house, brothers and sisters?
Only child, and parents divorced, but they kind of kept together for a while, I think, to try to not disrupt me. They made it through middle school for me. But my mom also gotten, like, I think they might not have made it through through middle school with me, or for me, if my mom gotten like a pretty serious car accident when I was in the seventh grade. Okay. Where she was like medically induced coma for a few weeks, and I was in the car when the accident happened. So I like kind of had to live with like some survivor guilt for a while, because sure. I was the only one in the car who wasn't. It's a very strange situation too. She got T-boned by a guy going like 60 miles an hour. And I was on the far end of the car. And when a traumatic accident like that happens, the car doors are supposed to like lock up. Like for some reason, all the doors locked up except for mine. My aunt, who I think was, my grandma was in the backseat with me, so she got hit a little bit, but my mom got the majority of it. But my aunt, who was on the passenger side, no damage whatsoever to that door. She was stuck in the car, but for some reason, the back passenger, I got to get out and look at my mom, who obviously looked dead to me, and only to find out like several hours later, no, she's still alive, kind of. But because of that, I think my parents like delayed, because my dad wasn't going to divorce a woman who was like brain damaged.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, timing is everything.
Yeah, though the relationship was not working, and I can still remember, like, and I'm careful sometimes to like, I'll share more on podcasts than I will on stage a lot of times, because my dad comes and sees my band sometimes, and there are certain things that I don't necessarily want to like express in that public a forum, to where like he might feel any type of way about like things that I don't hold against him.
Sure.
But I can very much remember being on vacation in Florida and seeing my mom drinking alcohol, and smoking a cigarette while it was just me and her like walking on the beach one night. And I knew for a fact that the doctors told her to never do those things again.
Got it.
Because of her accident. So like, I think there was like little things like that, that, because one of the reasons why like Inclination, like the band name, comes about is because I felt like it was always sort of a natural thing for me to be straight edge. It just felt like something I was inclined
to.
That was who you were, right. And, And I like think back on like a lot of things, and like that is certainly one part of my life that pops out was me having that understanding of like what substances, how substances can control you. Whether or
Absolutely.
Not you're informed that you should not or cannot partake in these things again. Sometimes you just fall back into it. And I think I just always had like a fear of ever letting something dominate me in that way. That it just kind of always kept me away from it. Even when I tried it when I was younger, I was never comfortable with it.
Right. And I think too, I mean, I, like you, was an only child. And so I think that idea of you not having that influence, whether it is like literally in the house, you know, I mean, because of course your parents can drink or smoke or do whatever, but you know, it usually the influence of your siblings can really, 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 you know, lay into you. And I mean, I've seen it. I'm sure you've seen it with friends where it's like they start to sample around with stuff because of their, you know, elder siblings or what have you. And I think that only childness probably helped you in many respects because it was just a matter of like, I'm just figuring this out on my own, like devoid of context.
Oh, absolutely. And in my youth was kind of more built up with less peer pressure and more cautionary tales. Cause my dad worked at a liquor store my entire childhood. He was a teacher for a bit, and then he kind of just fell into working for a liquor store in the town. I say suburb, but like it's like kind of the like more like white trash area of of Louisville. So not really like it's suburban certainly, but it is like more like of the working class, like not as affluent suburb in Louisville. But he kind of just fell into working at this liquor store, which is where he met my mom. And from there, like, I mean, again, like my mom, I love her to death, but like I've seen her like struggles with substance, whether it's alcohol and her inability to stay away from it when, after she was told to, or you know, smoking cigarettes, and then finding out as an adult that she smoked while she was pregnant with me, which was really fun to know when I was like in my mid 20s. Like, I've now got to think back on like, is there anything wrong with me that like that might have caused? But sure. But in laughing about it, because what can I do? I can't do anything. I'm not gonna be mad at her. I have a really great relationship with her, like, despite all of these different things where like I guess I could have been unfair to her, which I think or in some people's opinions very fair and upset. But I think it goes to a lot of my feeling as an adult and growing up, especially being drug free and straight edge for as long as I have been, where I have like a lot of empathy and understanding for people who need things or feel they need things to get through the day. Whereas like, even though I, you know, love Earth Crisis, I don't necessarily exactly agree on some of the stances.
Sure. Of course. Right. Like, I mean, you agree with it when you're 16 years old and, you know, being like, oh my gosh, like this. Yeah, of course. Like everybody, you know, everybody should be cleaned out of the streets or whatever. And then it's like, oh yeah, there's something that's called like, you know, empathy and perspective as you get older, where it's like, yeah. There's a lot more going on there.
Yeah, there's a certain economic thing that enters into a lot of people's usage of these things. And it certainly avoided me when I was 16 and just was like, oh, that's fucking hard. But now as an adult, I'm like, actually, it's just really hard.
there's layers to it. Listener, you know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about merchandise. And how important it is to me, and probably how important it is to you as well, and how important it is to go to rockabilly.com, where you can use the promo code 100 words or less, that's the number 100, to get 10% off of your entire order, to buy band merch from like artists as wide, and the variety is so large with, you know, Bring Me the Horizon, Grateful Dead, Black Sabbath, Slayer, The list could go on, but I just want you to go to the website and you will be able to order to your heart's content. It ships to you very, very fast. It's based in the center of the United States of America in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area. I love this company. They are a lifeblood for this particular show. And I think what they do is really important because, again, officially licensed stuff, no bootlegs. Bands get paid. The rights holders get paid. An independent business gets supported, and then you're able to solve all of your gift giving for a particular season. Or maybe you're just like, you know what? I gotta do a whole new wardrobe for the summer. I get some new band merch, and then maybe I'll get my dad a really cool Bob Marley shirt or whatever it is. Like, they have it and it's awesome. So rockabilia.com, 100 words or less is the promo code, 10% off of your entire order. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray. Did you, as you were going through school and everything like that, you know, did you care about school? Was it one of those things that you just, you know, did because obviously you had to? Where did you land there?
So I skipped my middle school graduation to go to the skate park.
Sure, as one does. Right.
And I slept through my sophomore year and got like a 0.6 GPA, I think.
That takes real effort, Tyler. Like a 0.6 is that, I mean, that's like, you're really trying.
I passed one semester of one class.
Incredible.
With a C. I really hated school, but then, so it kind of all came to a head with me in school when I was, well, I'm failing sophomore year. I'm 15 years old. I come home from a skateboard trip that we used to take every year up to Chicago. And I show up at my house with 11 staples in my head. My parents find out I'm failing all my classes. They take my skateboard away, which was my only reason to live at the time. And that actually led to the couple instances in my life where I ever drank alcohol. And it was strictly because I was mad at my parents. It was the most immature reaction I could have possibly had.
Sure.
And both of those instances where I drank alcohol, one didn't do anything but taste bad, and the other one just gave me a headache. So when I came to terms that I don't think my rebellion was going to come through that avenue, I ended up putting together a secret skateboard out of all of my friends' extra paraphernalia they had and keeping it at a friend's house who I would go and stay with on the weekends because I was just grounded from my skateboard. I wasn't grounded from having friends.
Sure.
But my parents didn't have to know about my secret skateboard. So I would, go do that. And that got me through to summer school, in which, you know, I got all my shit back, but I went into my junior year with the thought that holy shit, I failed a grade. I'm going to have to be in high school an extra year now.
You're like, whoops.
So I did everything I could my junior and senior year to graduate on time. And I did. But I did it on my own terms by doing all of my homework while I was at school, knowing I couldn't be trusted to do it at home. And I had to take full class loads, no free periods those 2 years. And I was able to do that. But I also was able to get to a point where I was comfortable missing. So my junior and senior year, I was a legal truant both years, but I had all A's and B's.
Talk about like an absolute like line pusher where you're just what's
I love it. I can't remember. I think I talked about this on Form of Passion with Ace, but I refer to it as my coming out of the closet moment where I came out to my parents that I'd been faking sick my entire life. But at this point I could show them the receipts. I could say, hey, I'm a senior. I'm telling you right now that all those times I was sick last year, I was faking. And I still got all A's and B's last year. So if I don't want to go to school, will you guys call in for me? And both my parents went along with it. They would call in to school for me if I felt like I didn't need to go, which I typically didn't go to school if I had to work that day. That was my rule, was it was one or the other. I'll go to school or I'll go to work, one or the other. But I graduated.
What was your job? What was your job? What were you doing for work?
So still the job I have now. Different position, different department. But when I was 16 in the summer, like beginning of summer after junior year, I broke, I think it was 6 or 7 skateboards in 5 days.
Okay.
And I was on a team at the time, so I skated for the skate shop within the skate park that LDB Fest happened at for a few years.
Oh, okay.
Riot Skate Park. I skated for the skate shop in that skate park, and I ran my tab up.
Amazing.
Because I could get shit on credit because I was on the team. They knew I was good for it because I was there fucking 4 or 5 days a week. So
yeah, they know where you live. You'll be around, right?
They did because the owner had driven me to my house many times.
Yep.
He drove me home from the park before. We would go out filming all the time, and they would have to drive me sometimes way out to Fern Creek, where I'm from. So I ran that tab up, and my parents were like, well, you're getting a fucking job now. But I'd already tried to get a job. I tried to get a job right when I turned 16. I almost worked for KFC. I got denied because I was too young. I walked my ass up and down like the main strip road where like all the shops and stuff were. Nobody would hire me because I was 16. But I got a job at a grocery store when I was 16. After breaking all these skateboards because of a family connection. Because at that time, so the grocery store I work for is unionized. And because of that, it was actually kind of hard to get on at that grocery store for a while because it was a good job. Was a good job.
Right.
19 years later, 18, 19, I can't remember. So I'm 35 now. I started there when I was 16. Do whatever that math is. That's how long I've been working there. I get that job, and that was my job through high school, and I thought it was just going to be my job through college. And then I dropped out of college and started touring.
It's just consistent, right? It's there.
And yeah, and I do say at this point in time, I do make what I would consider a living wage. I do not believe everybody else at my store does, which is why I wanted to be a union steward and try to push for things to be better, because now you have to choose to sign up for the union because of our ex-governor passed a right-to-work law in our incredibly red state, which makes the union, joining the union, non-compulsory anymore. So I had to join the union when I got the job. Now,
right,
I have to talk you into it.
Right.
Which now is my job. Like, hey,
right. Got it. I know as far as like the introduction to, you know, punk and hardcore and stuff in your life, I mean, I know that, I mean, you've articulated it in a few interviews before in regards to, you know, Tony Hawk Pro Skater. I mean, that's such a foundational thing in the same way that, you know, comps were obviously like maybe a few years prior. I mean, comps were still important today as they were, you know, when you started to get into it. And I also like the fact that you called out, you're like, yo, I dug the ska stuff too, because like, you know, when you're just drinking from the fire hose, you're like, I don't care. I just like Goldfinger sounds sick. Like, this is great. Less Than Jake is good too. I'm guessing it was special for you to like get exposed to this stuff because there, you know, you probably weren't keyed into like record stores and places that had sort of subculture. So you were just like being like, oh, I'm exposed to this stuff that I've never heard before.
There actually was a cool record store in which I would go to that record store and I would buy like Incubus CDs from.
Oh, sure. We talking Ear Ecstasy?
Ear Ecstasy. Yes. I would, my parents would take me to Ear Ecstasy to buy the regular popular music CDs that I was into via MTV and whatnot when I was in middle school. The funny thing, the place I purchased my first punk CDs from was fucking Best Buy using a gift
Amazing.
Card.
Yep.
Perfect. And I got Fugazi 13 songs based off of just seeing a Fugazi sticker on an Ed Templeton like skate photo on my wall when I was a kid.
Sure.
Like he was doing a nose grind on a rail and prominently on that underside of his skateboard was a giant Fugazi sticker. And that hung in my head. And when I was going to Best Buy to buy a Minor Threat CD because it was in a skate video that I was in. Filler was the opening song for a skate video that I was in that the skate park made. In which I skated to Dinosaur Jr. in that video against my will. I didn't know what Dinosaur Jr. was. I liked it, but yeah. I didn't know what it was until I bought the video and was like, "Oh, what's this song that my skateboarding has been put to? Oh, it's Feel the Pain."
Sure.
I heard Filler in that video, and I had also heard Bad Religion in a different skate video. So I went to buy Minor Threat and Bad Religion at Best Buy, and I saw a Fugazi sticker or a Fugazi CD, and I bought it just based on that sticker being on the Ed Templeton skateboard. I had no idea that Ian MacKaye was in both of these bands for years.
Love it, love it. And honestly, that is so... It's so perfect because it's exactly what you need as a kid because you're just gravitating towards music that you like devoid of context.
Absolutely. And it's like, it's all cool.
Yeah, it's only until later.
All cool.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all shit that no one I know at school knows.
Right. It's Which is secret. Already cool. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. They're never going to ask you like, do you know Ian MacKaye plays in Minor Threat or Embrace? And you're like, what do you know? It's like you are sharing all of this dumb information to them. And they're just like, dude, I like Deftones or whatever, which I mean, I like Deftones too, but still that's just, you know, about something they don't.
Yeah, no. And that was definitely like a big appeal for me getting into punk and hardcore was the idea that like, and being straight edge too, was I was one of like five straight edge kids in my high school. Given my high school was like notorious for being the high school where everyone smoked weed. So I was even weirder even before I was straight edge because I just didn't smoke weed.
Right, right. That's incredible. And like when you started to, you know, really unlock obviously all of your, you know, passion for, you know, punk hardcore subculture and everything like that, how were your parents reacting to you getting into this stuff? You know, because obviously already like skateboarding, even though it had reached, you know, more mainstream levels of when you were doing it than what it was like 10 years prior, you know, so you're adding a subculture of skateboarding and then a subculture of, you know, punk and hardcore. Were they just like, all right, Tyler, just really just don't hurt yourself too badly, I guess. Like, you know, were they, obviously they were permissive not to let you go to shows and stuff.
It was the same attitude they had towards me skateboarding. And that was something my dad has told me before, like, he can remember one of the first times he went to the skate park and he saw me like hitting like rails and like kickflipping over the pyramid and stuff and like ollieing up a Euro gap and like doing like a bunch of tricks in sequence. And he told me, he was like, oh, this is what he's good at. Like, this is the first thing he's ever been good at. And he could see that. He could see that, like, I was better than a lot of the other kids who were there. And after watching his incredibly tiny son, because I was very small for, like, most of my life, who was never going to be good at football. I was never going to be I was not athletic enough for baseball. I didn't have the stamina for track and field or soccer or anything like that. He got to see me be good at something for once. So I will say, like, once they kind of just like let me go skateboarding all the time, they didn't really even know I was getting that involved into punk and hardcore. They just thought I was still out skating all the time.
They had no clue like where you were. They're just like, well, it's either one or the other, I guess.
No. And yeah. I didn't have a cell phone until, I didn't have a cell phone until college. And even then, my best friend at the time, her mom got me on their cell phone plan because she was like, it was like my rich friend. And her mom just like realized like, wait, Tyler doesn't have a phone. Well, here, you can pay me $15 a month and I will get him a phone. So I remember paying my friend's mom, Casey, $15 for my flip phone, in which I think I have Verizon. So I had to watch my text to anybody who didn't have Verizon because it was only free for me to text people with Verizon at the time. So like, even then, like I had, when I was navigating all this stuff in junior year and senior year, starting to go to shows and starting to be involved in punk and skateboarding really out on my own a lot, where like I would disappear Friday morning for school and my parents wouldn't see me again until Sunday night. They would just assume I was going to come home. And I did. Because of that, they would let me go.
Yeah. And I think too, there's something that is interesting, like the only child experience too. Like, I mean, my parents were the same way. Like, I mean, they were very permissive, but you know, had certain guardrails for obvious reasons, but it was one of those things where it's like, as long as I was, you know, holding up my end of the bargain, whatever that may mean, then they were, you know, generally like, yeah, they would be like, okay, that's totally fine. You can, you know, drive to Santa Barbara and then like come back, I guess, Monday morning and go to school or whatever, like just to go to shows. And it was like, you know, there comes that time where it's just like, wow, like my parents, I mean, I guess were like cool with it, but then shouldn't they have asked maybe a few follow-up questions or whatever? But it's like, no, they didn't. That's fine.
I totally get that. I think also Straight Edge really helped that. When my parents understood what Straight Edge was and that I was that, they were like, not going to lie, proud of me.
Right. They totally. Were like, you're able to get away with more. Yeah.
Not doing drugs, which, yep. Dog, I've been arrested several times. I've called my mom from jail every one of those times. I've essentially prank called my mom from jail every single one of those times because she wasn't going to be the one to get me out, but I still would just call her and let her know where I was and that I was okay. That didn't even dissuade them from thinking that I was still making the right decisions, even though I was getting arrested for trespassing or, I guess the only other time I got arrested was for a bench warrant for a traffic shit. But, yeah. Right. Yeah, I've got experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even without drugs, I've got experiences.
Right, as one does. And did you start going to I guess local shows, or were you the first shows that you started to attend were the ones that were like, you know, kind of coming through with like touring bands and stuff like that?
Strictly local shows when I started going.
Amazing.
There was a punk band. Akin to like Green Day, Blink 182, Operation Ivy. That a kid who I went to high school with was in. They would cover all of those bands I just mentioned. They were one of the bands that would play a lot of local shows, and I also was kind of best friends with a kid my junior and senior year who was in a Against Me influenced band. So I got into that shit too.
Sure.
I got way into Against Me, way into a lot of that like Planet X Records and No Idea Records stuff via
some also good orcore.
Yeah, living in Louisville, like Louisville was very into like the Jade Tree, No Idea stuff too. So like that was all. The same week I was given Desperate Measures and Count Me Out, I was also given Lifetime, Jersey's Best Dancers. So all these
great
things
mixture,
were the same.
Great mixture.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's the reason I am the way I am. And the reason why I like all the things I do is because I was very lucky to get introduced to all this stuff at the same time and be so hungry for it that I was willing to dive right in. I talked about this a little bit on whenever I third mic'd on Axe to Grind, but there was a comic book themed hardcore band that was the first band that I got really into that was a local band, and they did all classic hardcore covers. So they were covering Black Perfect. Flag and Misfits and Bad Brains and Minor Threat, which was all the shit that I liked. So when I started getting dragged to shows by my best friend and my best skateboarding friend, Tyler, is my first roommate. We were no longer really best friends after we were first roommates. That's just how it goes when you move into a place when you're 18 and share a room with your best friend at the time.
Absolutely.
But he would start dragging me to shows, and the first few shows I went to were a like Cold World clone band called Brains Out was playing, and it was cool. It was like actually good hardcore music, in my opinion. So I didn't see like a really bad band first either. I got to see like moshing and singing along and stuff. And then when I started seeing the comic book band Ganthet, they started playing songs I already knew because they were playing covers I knew. So I got to experience sure. singing along. And all of a sudden, that's the only thing I cared about in the world was I now need to know the lyrics to all the songs that happen that that are going to be played in front of me. Because this is the best feeling in the world is singing along to a band with other people.
Right. I got homework now.
And I did my homework. I read the lyrics. I listened to it non-fucking-stop. I drilled this shit. And so those were like very, very highly local things that I was seeing. And then some of those bands started bringing in some of the touring bands because that scene kind of happened outside of the Maximum Louisville stuff that was like Black Cross and Coliseum. I started going to those shows too. I remember seeing Municipal Waste play. They used to do these last Saturday shows. Ryan Patterson would put them on. And one of the first ones, I think, was Municipal Waste. And, unfortunately, another one they did was Paint It Black, and I missed that one to go skating instead. I can remember what I was doing that day. wasn't better than what
was
I,
it wasn't that important. Yeah,
wasn't that important. Sure. There was a picture of me eating a Oreo ice cream on a curb, and I knew every time I looked at that picture, I could have seen Paint It Black instead of being there. That
right.
Day. It haunted me for years.
Those things, especially when you're, I love when you have those like really crystallized memories of certain things, whether it was like, you know, or on the flip side where you're like, oh dude, I remember, you know, completely bombing a science test because I had to go see Converge or whatever. Like those are the things that really stick out in your mind. Or like you said, the shows that you missed because it was like, oh damn it. Like I just got into that band. And then, you know, 2 weeks prior, like they came through on tour and I just missed them because, you know, I just didn't know about them at the time.
Yeah, I missed the last time Avail played Louisville by like 2 months. I started going to shows 2 months later. It was awful.
Yeah. You're like, damn it. Hello, listener. I'm here to tell you about the awesome people at evilgreed.net. They are an amazing web store solution provider for record labels and bands. But the cool thing about them is they have a very specific point of view. Like, you know what I'm talking about. When it comes to heavy music, like there's definitely, you know, the commercial heavy stuff. And then there's the stuff that's like, you know, a little bit left of center, still popular, but a little bit left of center. That is where Evil Greed serves their customer best. Like they work with record labels like Sgt. House and Triple B and Flat Spot Records. So anything heavy and artistic, that is what they do. And they offer, you know, vinyl merch of all shapes and sizes, whether it's, you know, shirts, long sleeves, sweaters, but it's all at one convenient location and you can do your shopping all there at evilgreed.net. And what's even cooler about it is they're based in Berlin, Germany. And I know you, the listener, are probably based in the United States. You're like, I don't know, man, like shipping something from over in Germany to me, it's going to take forever. Fret not. It will not. It has gotten, I've ordered from them before and I've gotten my merch in like 7, 8, 9 days, like just a great, great experience. And like I said, you'll be able to find so many cool band stores and so many cool things. Like I'm just looking at their website right now. They have this awesome, awesome Brutish shirt that has all their tour dates listed on the back. And we're talking like, you know, 6 months worth of tour dates. It's just really, really cool. But I love popping onto their site, like probably once every 2 or 3 days and just like seeing their new stuff and being like, oh yeah, I think I'll order that. And then I'll put this vinyl in here. And then I will put this sweater in here. And I'll be like, all right, I'll just let it cook for a minute, think about it, and then pull the trigger and order. So go to evilgreed.net, check out all of their wares, and you will leave satisfied and order stuff. Because, you know, I mean, if you just leave the website, like it's, you know, going to do a pop-up and be like, hey, we'll give you some percentage off or whatever, but you get how marketing works. But anyways, I love evilgreed.net and you should too. So go to their website.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
So as you started to go to shows and everything like that and have that feeling of singing along and stuff, did you immediately want to start a band and like participate in that way? Or was that something you had to like work your way up to?
That never entered my mind. I got asked to sing for the first band I was ever in by a group of people who weren't really hardcore kids. They were what I guess you'd call like PC punks.
Oh, sure.
Who lived in the first punk house that existed in my lifetime. So when I was younger, there wasn't really house shows happening for like a while. And then this older guy named Preston, who was a really nice dude, but he lived in a house and was going to basically had talked to the landlord into letting him like take over like the rest of the house with 5 to 6 other people. Classic like sheet wall cordoning sure. off different corners of the house. And when that house got established, 2 months after they moved in, I moved in to a different part of it. And that's when I moved into that house with my best friend at the time, Tyler, who would no longer be that close after living on top of each other for an entire year.
Sure.
But that house, the week it started, Latterman played there. And that was like a really formidable band for me being younger. But like most punk houses, when a bunch of people who play music move into a house together, they start bands. And even though none of them were like traditional capital H hardcore kids, a couple of them liked Youth of Today, a few of them liked Refused, and some of them liked Earth Crisis and Strife and things like that. So those people with very different music tastes started a band with very different sounding songs.
Sure.
And they asked me to sing for it. And I got to play with Black Cross. Like, I think our second show was with Black Cross. We did a 7 seconds cover. But more or less, so I always have been and am still to a degree I'm aware of obnoxious. That's just, it is. I'm cool with it. I know I'm loud. But,
like I was about to say, so like obnoxious, like how so? Obnoxious where you're like, you're sucking all the air out of the room, or is it
I'm
like
trying to entertain everybody.
Okay, got it. All right.
I'm Joker. I'm trying to entertain everybody. I'm trying to make sure everybody's having a good time. I'm trying to have a good time and hoping that my good time causes other people to have good times. So sure. Like that was me skateboarding. I was the loudest person in the skate park. When somebody landed something, I was the guy who tackled you. I was like, my board lived banging on coping. Like I was, I beat the drums for my friends to succeed. All I wanted was for everybody to do good. Which still today, I guess I just am who I am and I always have been.
That's literally, I was about to say, that's literally why you run a record label.
Yeah. exactly. Always looking for somebody I can bang my board on the coping for. So the second somebody put a mic in my hand, it almost made it that there's always going to be a demand for me to be doing that. So from that band, when it fizzled out, a few of the people still wanted to do a band. So we kind of morphed into a different band that legit never recorded, but I honestly wish it had because it would be my most embarrassing band, but it had the funniest name. It was going to be called Varsity Font.
Oh, it's great.
I know. I'd still never heard a band called Varsity Font before.
No, I mean, it seems so obvious, but also just there's, like, you know.
There's Berthold City. Berthold City's close.
It's pretty close. Yeah. I mean, it's like calling your band, you know, Ariel or whatever. Yeah. It's like, yeah, those for sure. I mean, there is a band, an awesome shoegaze band named Ariel, and they literally use the Ariel font, but that's neither here nor there.
That's fucking awesome.
Totally. And it's like, I honestly didn't even really put that together until you said that. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, like that is
what it is.
I was like, that's why they named their band like that. Okay. That's funny.
That's awesome.
But yeah, but no, I love that, especially too, where it's like the line that gets towed with bands that are, you know, a joke or whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, whatever, Throwdown and like these bands that start as a joke, but then, you know, sometimes eventually end up being serious because like people take them seriously or they're just obviously good. But Varsity Font, I'm sure
it was a joke.
Was at that, like, yeah, no, this is clearly a joke. So like, calm down.
Yeah, no, first two bands were very much joke bands. And then by the time all of the first few bands I was in had a through line of members. So it was either the same guitar player was in the first three bands I started. And everybody else kind of juggled around. And I think the kid who played bass in my first band, he wasn't in the second one. And then he played guitar in the third one. And the person who played bass in the third band I was in now plays bass in Gates to Hell and Constraint, my other band. And he played guitar in Another Mistake for the last few years of the band too. So like me and Dustin have been, if Constraint's still a band, which fingers crossed it still is because I still like doing it.
Right.
I've been in bands with Dustin since he was 17 years old, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
one of my longest relationships.
I love that. I love that.
But
I wanted to hit on the fact, like mentioning a band like Ladderman, that is, especially when you start to get awakened in ways that you start to view the world outside of yourself and like the small bubble that you exist in, whether it's a band like Rage Against the Machine or there's a band like Ladderman, like, those are all incredibly, like, I think that helps people, honestly, like, for lack of a better term, stick around within because at that point, music means more to you than just obviously like going to a show and, you know, like existing in the teenage experience or whatever, or young adult experience, but like connecting it to the world at large, that's where it probably just, you know, there's no way that you were able to think about things differently after getting exposed to that band.
Oh yeah. Broke my brain. Completely broke my brain. I'm very lucky. That's one of the reasons why I stress my band out so much, because I like talking during shows and I don't plan out what I'm really going to say when I open my mouth, but I have things. There's all these songs are about things. They're about frustrations. They're about real life and real world issues. And I get that from bands like Ladderman and Crime and Stereo and a punk band from Chicago, The Broadways. Those were bands I got into when I was younger that really made me look at the world in a way in which I feel very lucky, because as a atomized white straight male, who lives in ostensibly the South, even though Louisville's very much a Midwest city, there's plenty of Confederate flags around. I could have easily been swayed, much like a lot of the kids I grew up with, into seeing the world through a different lens. And I know that punk and hardcore and those messages, because they just made sense to me, got me to be a smarter person than I would have been otherwise. I could have been easily tricked into a much simpler way of looking at the world, which could have led me to being a fucking racist or a transphobe,
yeah,
or something like that. Like I see the slippery slope of that, because it was the people I grew up with and the people I work with. Like, cause I've also, again, alongside me going through my punk journey, I've had the same working class job my whole life, in which I've worked with people who actively vote against their interests and do not understand how manipulated they are into. Like, I had a coworker ask me about my New York trip and be shocked that I rode the subway, because she's heard such scary stories about the subway in New York. And I'm like, that's just the closed-minded Kentucky, like, mindset in so many ways. It's not unique at all.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think what this was actually going to dovetail into a question I was going to ask of, you know, the fact that when you become disconnected, I know this sounds like some political stump speech or whatever, like when you become disconnected with the real world. So it's like, you know, that person not having experience with the subway, like probably ever, in the same way that, you know, when bands get connected into, you know, becoming like that is their life, you know, and I know many of your friends obviously exist in that now, where it's like, okay, I'm touring, you know, 7-8 months out of the year, I'm being in a band full time. And then that, you know, disconnects them from either a lot of, you know, their friends, like they're literally gone for large stretches of time. And so like that disconnect, I know, is difficult to balance and then also be able to be creative, because then, I mean, it's that joke, you know, your sophomore record, it's like you have your whole life to write the first record, and then the second record you got to write in a year and a half or whatever. You know, I'm sure you are either watching people go through that or have obviously like seen people go through that. You know, how does that, I guess, interact with your, you know, your own personal approach with the bands that you're doing and stuff like that? I realize that's like a big question, but
no, I mean, you're right. And I totally get that. Some of what you just asked me is going into my thoughts on what a next Inclination record might even be about, period. And I think I feel like, so it's very complicated, because I live in my life in a way thinking that I work really, really hard, but I'm fully aware that I don't think people should have to work as hard as I do, nor do I think everybody should even have to work, just because of what all this technology was supposed to do was give us more free time, and it hasn't. Where I think it falls with, as far as creating art, I think that, I think you just have to like reorient the way you're writing. And that's if you are able to vent all of your frustrations or, you know, disappointments or anger into your music or your art, that is what your art's going to produce. But now if your art is going to be produced while you're on the road and while essentially your dreams are coming true, you could write it about that. You could write it about whatever. You could write it about this, the fear of losing that. You could write it about the appreciation for having it in the first place. And I think that's where, like, it sucks. It sucks because of what came out about the singer and everything, but the Allegiance song that Allegiance wrote about Champion is one of my favorite hardcore songs because it's so unique.
Yep.
It's so unique. And I think it's for a band like Allegiance that so many of their songs are anger and fury, to have a song that is so like loving and vulnerable in a way, which I think is like, cause so many bands like think that vulnerability means like, oh, I'm going to show people how sad I am. And I think that like vulnerability can also be like, I'm going to show people how like appreciative and loving I am too. That being said, I'm always going to be angry. And that's part of my life experience, that I feel grateful that I'm going to have a working class job my whole life. I'm always going to find something to be angry about. Yeah, I'm never going to want for material here.
Yeah. Totally. And it's like, I think that idea, especially now, I mean, I'm thankful, and I know many other people are thankful, that bands like, you know, you guys, Incendiary, Mind Force, whatever, the list could go on and on, where it's like these hardcore bands don't need to grind themselves to the absolute bone, but still be relevant, be able to play shows when they want to, when they can, and like they still can exist in their own lives. And to your point, be able to actually produce something that is worthwhile, as opposed to like, okay, I got a tour, I got to do this, I got to do that. It's just like, no, we'll say yes to the things we want to. And then, you know, we'll still be able to like hold some relevance to where it's like, yeah, you know, whatever, 100 kids are going to show up and sing along and everybody will have fun, because that's kind of the whole point of the thing, right?
It's absolutely the whole point of it. And like, I think I'm very honored to be mentioned in a list of like Mind Force and Incendiary, because I think that their lack of ability to play as much is much more intentional than ours is, because I want to play all the time.
Right. You're like, it's all the other losers in my band. No, I'm just kidding.
The rest of my band have like real lives and responsibilities, right, or play guitar and Knocked Loose, which prevents us, there are actual hindrances of us ever playing things, where I think everybody in Incendiary and Mind Force are like similarly unable to do things, where they all feel, which is probably why I'm so insane when we play, is because it's way more pent up for me, because I've been thinking about like how bad I want to play since the last time we played. I haven't been able to distract myself with deadlines or children or all the other things that occupy the rest of my bandmates' lives, that keep them, I feel like, much more unaware of that tension in their life, which I live in the tension.
Right. Yeah. Dovetailing into your, you know, the label and obviously what you do in regards to that, I mean, you can easily see why that it exists, not only because of, you know, you bashing your skateboard for your friends and stuff like that, but the fact that you want to not only celebrate bands that come from Louisville, but, you know, bands that are obviously in the orbit as well. And the question I want to ask is like, you know, the business implications. Like, you obviously have to make decisions in regards to like, okay, I want to put this record out, like, regardless if I'm going to lose, you know, $1,000 on it or whatever. But there has to be, you know, that mindfulness of the fact that, you know, you can't just continue to lose money at a thing or whatever, because otherwise the thing won't exist. So how do you interact with, you know, the business on the label side of things, and then obviously also the band, just to be able to, you know, kind of make things move along?
So the business of the band, which I can't speak on as much, because most of those decisions, like, I honestly, like, And even though, like I said, you know, God willing, constraints still a band anymore, I am very, very lucky that I got to do not only Constraint with someone like Ryan Story, but I get to do Inclination with people like Caleb and Peter. They really facilitate a lot of the stuff that happens with our bands without me having to do much of anything except for stay in shape. I understand a lot of, like, Inclination's the first band that I've ever been in that put money in my hand. Not very much, but
yeah,
that's but never been
money nonetheless. Yeah.
That's never been expected for me, and it's never been something that I count on for anything. I have almost, I would say, spent 90% of the Inclination money I've ever gotten on LDB stuff. I typically take whatever money I get from Inclination because it's found money to me, and I'll start a project for a record. My main thing with LDB is trying to be charitable and not dismissive of bands that I do think are good that I just can't afford to take the risk on. And knowing that that's because I took a risk on a band and absolutely lost. So right, like, I can only really afford to do that like maybe twice, three times a year. I can afford to completely fund a project out of my pocket. The rest of the projects have to be funded by the label in general. Just because I can't go down $6,000 a year on the label. But I have.
Right. And that's, I think it's, I mean, the reason I ask that is because, like, there is that implication, I mean, especially within the context of punk and hardcore, where, you know, the moment anybody makes any sort of money off of art, people are, you know, I mean, to a lesser degree these days, but, you know, there becomes that element of, you know, oh, really? Like, you know, you turn to procore or whatever. It's just like, okay, calm down. Like, people need to make money off the thing in order to, like, still continue to do the thing that you like or whatever. But the reason I ask that is because sometimes people are, like, excited to, like, get into the nitty gritty with that, and others, like, it just gets foisted upon them. So it sounds like you, I mean, it's a necessary evil for you to interact with, but you don't necessarily, I guess, maybe like it, or maybe I'm just putting words in your mouth.
The necessary evil is just that I have to be what feels like an asshole sometimes, but sure. I don't mean it that way. It's just me having to be realistic sometimes with bands who reach out to me and are like, oh, we would love to, you know, to do this. And I have to actually take into account, like, what's the market for this? Like, how much do I believe in this versus how much do I want people to believe in this? And then I have to look at the how much money I have at the moment. And I'm going to go ahead and say, like, oftentimes I look at my bank account.
Right. Totally. You're like, let's look in the LDB. Yeah, let's look at the LDB account. Oh, wow. Okay. We only got that. Looks like I'm going to have to, you know, put a little, like, my own cash in there.
I have a bad habit of when we have money in the LDB PayPal, I find somewhere to put it immediately. And yeah, so that's why sometimes you'll see us have like four records come out in like a few months, and then sometimes there's not a record coming out for eight or nine.
Yeah, right, exactly. It ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
The last two things I wanted to hit on was the you, and I mean, I jokingly made fun of you when I emailed you this request, but just, you know, the idea of you being a Luddite. I mean, clearly you're not a Luddite because, you know, we are. But it's, I just like even before I knew kind of, you know, anything about you, it had, like, I just had noticed where it was just like, oh yeah, like, you know, this dude, Tyler, not like people were actively talking about you being, hey, Tyler has a flip phone. Like, he hates technology and stuff like that.
It's a thing.
Okay. What was, is that the, I guess the, you know, quote unquote hatred of technology, is that, you know, coming from a place of reality, or has it just been like, you know, the joke obviously perpetuates itself?
All the above to a certain extent, I think. So I always just, like, I didn't want like, I like texting to tweet, honestly, even though it got me in trouble the most famous time where I sexted Twitter. I like texting to tweet. I thought it was fun to be able to just text 40404 and that be how I posted on social media. And I did think it was funny when someone just made an Instagram account for me and would post things without my knowledge. I thought all that stuff was funny. And then as time's gone on, I've grown up, we've grown up in the world where we've seen the real time effect that has had on all of our brains and our younger generation's brains. And I don't spend the whole day glued to my phone. I text people when they text me. I text people when I have a thought or something. I still like phone calls to a certain extent. And I just never really saw the need to have all of that information on me at all times, given I do have an iPod Touch that I use to listen to Spotify and podcasts and whatnot. And I use it for emails, but I mean, it doesn't even have Twitter or Instagram on it, mostly because it's full of music that I can't fit any of that shit on. So sure. Like it is a bit of self-fulfilling. I mean, I do have a flip phone tattoo now, so it's like,
you're leaning into it.
I've leaned in for sure. But again, like I think that everything we know now about what social media and how it's affected people's interactions with each other, how little of it's even real, how many of it's just like bots talking to each other now. It's just really nice to like live in a world where like everybody I'm encountering is a real person and maybe right. Isn't just like, you can't make a fake account to go like talk shit to somebody in real life.
And yeah, you either do it or you don't.
Right? Yeah, you either do it or you don't, and you live with the repercussion of whether or not that person tries to fight you or not because of it, and or talks such bad shit back to you that you hate yourself, and you have to own all of that stuff. You have to own all of your interactions like that, and I guess that's really it. Is just my my want to like not live in an anonymous existence. And I don't know. Just not have to look at all the bullshit all the time, dude. It's not great.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Yeah, I definitely don't want to come across like, explain your position, Tyler. It's more so because there's like varying degrees of it, like that the buy-in that people have with, you know, certain platforms, whether it's, you know, X, whether it's Instagram or whatever, where it's like, you know, are you getting more out of it than you're putting into it? And like, you know, are you able to like disconnect from certain aspects of it? And to your point, like, you know, I mean, these apps and everything else that exists is obviously meant to do the exact opposite. It's meant to, you know, spend all of your time there. Like that's all that everybody wants. And so, you know, you having the deliberate choice to be like, yeah, I'll tap in, but I'm not going to let it consume me is, you know, very reasonable.
Yeah, and in my ultimate defense, like I don't have anything on me when I'm at shows typically. Like I am notorious for walking up to a friend's merch table and sliding my flip phone under a t-shirt on the table and walking away.
Right.
And I don't come back till the end of the show.
Totally. You're like, keep this safe for me.
Yeah.
And your friends are ever like, Tyler, you'll be fine. No one's gonna take your, you know, your Motorola Razr, you're fine.
Yeah, no.
The last thing I want to hit on was the, you know, the fact that you obviously do a podcast as well, you know, a country music podcast, you go down rabbit holes. The thing that I was curious about where it's like, when, you know, you start to like, you're a fan of music, broadly speaking, like, of course, we're always going to self-identify as hardcore kids. And, you know, like even when you're, you know, 60 years old, you're still going to call yourself a hardcore kid, but you start to obviously peel away at layers of different aspects of music. When you started to, you know, really engage with, you know, country music and Steve Earle and finding all that you can about that, does it scratch an itch that is similar to when you started to peel back the layers of, you know, punk and hardcore and stuff like that? Or is it kind of scratching a different itch that you're like, oh man, like this is great music, but like there's not the same, you know, whatever trappings that sometimes these weirdo subcultures that we participate in have.
It's honestly a bit of both. And I think, so like for me, I was raised on a lot of like classic rock stuff. Like my dad, incredibly musical person. He's played guitar my whole life. He's not like an amazing guitarist. He's not like played in bands, but I've like grown up with like music in the house at all times. They had like the CD catalogs. So like I was like, my parents showed me Nirvana, like given it was the MTV Unplugged, but like they were, my dad was way into music in the 90s. And even got like very, after the divorce, got very into like the local music scene too. Not punk and hardcore, even though my dad likes Bitter End.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. He thinks they're very good. and he's very impressed with, he was very impressed with Judiciary at our record release.
Amazing.
But my dad, like, he really showed me a lot of music, and he got me into things via osmosis. Like, I mean, of course my parents liked the Beatles, but my dad liked John Prine a lot when I was a kid, and Bob Dylan. So I got like exposed to that a lot. So I always kind of had this affinity for folk music, and I always really appreciated what the songs were about. Bob Dylan in particular, like, was my favorite songwriter for years and years and years. I would come back to him all the time, for guidance. even though so many of his songs are nonsense and made up, there's like real truths worked in there. The cops don't need you, and man, they expect the same is something that I certainly heard as a child and took in, and then watched that shit play out real time my entire life. I've always had like an affinity for folk music and whatnot, and also rock. Like I have a Creedence Clearwater Revival back tattoo. So that stuff's like really important to me. And I always wrote country music off, because country music to me, I didn't consider John Prine or even like Johnny Cash country music. When I was a kid, that shit was different, because country music was like Alan Jackson, who, not gonna lie, has tracks now, but a lot of that 90s pop country stuff was just like bullshit, redneck, like stuff that people I went to school with who hated me liked. And I wrote it all off, but I did have affinity for Waylon Jennings and things like that. And I didn't understand the difference between like that pop country stuff and the outlaw country stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to Bob Dylan was my favorite songwriter until I heard Steve Earle. And I've never really identified with a single songwriter or a single artist the way that I identify with his music. And I just got completely obsessed. And it was probably like 2016 or so that I really started diving into related artists, to things that like I did like Townes Van Zandt and Waylon Jennings. I started digging deeper, and through listening to Steve Earle, I got into like Guy Clark and a lot of that other like folk singer stuff that I just never had a person who showed me any of it before. And much like hardcore, and you know, you find out like about Minor Threat and Black Flag and Bad Brains, and then you find out you can go see like Turnstile play very similar music to, you know, to what the Bad Brains played, you can be a part of something contemporary that connects to something much deeper. I started finding out about like Drive-By Truckers and Sturgill Simpson and other like contemporary people doing like country music and folk music that is very much still in that same ethic as Steve Earle and Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt, to understand like, damn dog, like music really is like just like always being kept alive by people who are doing it for the right reasons. I also had the realization in like the 2015, 2016s that like the only people who played like rock, like 70s, like six, like late 60s, early 70s rock further than that were these outlaw country guys. they were the only ones playing like barroom fight music. And I like
totally.
It.
Totally. Yeah. No, I love that because I do think it is so fun, and it really just explores this part in human brains that have this ability to be like, okay, I'm going to like this thing. I'm going to find out as much as I possibly can about it. And you become obsessive, whether it's, you know, I mean, I myself like got super into soundtracks for like 5 to 7 years where it's just like, you know, I talk about classical composers, and it's just like, why do we do this? And then it's like, I mean, ultimately exactly what you're talking about, where you just start to peel away layers and then you start to see how one begat the other. And then you put together this tapestry of music and you're just like, oh yeah, this is all weirdly connected.
Yeah, no, and it's also like it's weirdly connected, and you realize there's always something keeping something alive in some way.
Yep.
And it's a living thing. Like art is to me like a living thing. It breathes and it has to be fed too. So like part of me and Brian, who was the first person I ever met who was obsessed with Steve Earle even remotely as much as I was, like I asked him, I was like, yo, you want to just like do a podcast where we go through all of Steve Earle's records? And then it kind of turned into like we're chronicling his whole life and career in a way that we didn't intend to do, but that's kind of how it is. But we're trying to have more guests on and do more like fun detour stuff, so that hopefully is going to keep coming. So if you're a hardcore person who has an interest in talking about country music, hit us up.
You're like, we're here for it. Well, Tyler, I appreciate you hanging out with me. Thank you for, letting me, you know, just dig into all the parts of your brain.
Dude, thank you. Anytime you want to talk bullshit, I'm down.
What a fun conversation. I really enjoy when, I mean, people are generally excited to come on the show and kind of, you know, have this sort of conversation and be able to dig deep into their past and have these questions thrown at them. They were like, wow, I haven't thought about that in like 10, 15 years. But, Tyler was genuinely excited and was happy to share anything and everything I asked him. So, you know, you heard it and I appreciate that. So big shout out to Tyler for coming on the pod. Next week, I have a great guest. I mean, because that's all I do here. You know, I'm not bringing you mediocre conversations or maybe sometimes I am, but that's not my fault or the guest's fault. Like sometimes it just, you know, happens. But jokes aside, this is actually a stand-up comedian. His name is Neil Rubenstein. He is a hardcore kid, but he's a stand-up comedian, and he's been doing that for the better part of, I would say, 10 years or so. But most notably, he is connected to the punk and hardcore scene because he used to play in a band called Sons of Abraham, which was honestly, and still to this day, one of the only Jewish hardcore bands as far as like their message was concerned and like what they were singing about. But Sons of Abraham was coming out probably like late 90s, I want to say, and great metallic hardcore. And Neil Rubenstein is a lifer. Like he is still very, very connected to the music scene, you know, goes to shows, all that sort of stuff. And obviously the parallels between the stand-up comedy world and playing in bands are like pretty much exactly the same thing, except you're just getting up there by yourself when you're doing stand-up comedy. And then with the band, you maybe have at least one or two other people with you. So anyways, that's what we got next week. Until then, please be safe, everybody. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.